Oh, the blood of Jesus. Oh, the blood of Jesus. Oh, the blood of Jesus washes white as snow. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day, Wednesday, January 23rd, 2008. The only January 3rd, or 23rd. We already had a January 3rd. January 23rd, 2008, in the history of humanity. Glad that you're making it the best one possible by logging on to Glenn Klein Online on this Wednesday night. Happy to be back in the warm climes of a sunny West Central Florida and out of the frigid temperatures of Wisconsin. I'll be talking about that trip home momentarily and how prayer came into effect. But some of you beautiful humans may have been surprised that I started the webcast tonight with an old hymn. And because you're used to hearing me starting it in a certain way. That's called consistency, ladies and gentlemen, and that's one of the most important things in a relationship. Is consistency. You want good, consistent relationships, have good, consistent communication. The person or the people in your life that know what to expect, that is a very positive thing. And if you want to have any kind of positive flow in a relationship, people knowing what to expect from you is a good thing. This is true in husband-wife relationships, between employee-employer, between friends. It doesn't make it, even between nations. Back in the day, there was this thing during the Cold War called the Soviet Union. You may remember them if you're old enough. One day that'll be true. The Soviet Union? Do you remember the Soviet Union? Well, back in the day, ladies and gentlemen, we had a consistent communication with the old Soviet Union, which was if they lobbed their nukes at us, we would lob our nukes at them. There was even a doctrine that they named. It was called MAD, M-A-D-D, Mutually Assured Destruction Doctrine. It was very consistent because we knew what they would do, and they knew what we would do, and the nukes never flew. This is a good thing. And so in discussing important issues and in a relationship, it is important to have consistency. And one of the things that we bring to the table each Wednesday night is a consistent message of the gospel. And at this point, we want to welcome the teacher of that consistent message that has literally gone around the four corners of the world, the president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams, from his home office, actually just his home, in beautiful Houston, Texas. Michael!
Good preaching, Robert.
Thank you very much. And by the way, since you said that, we've had many mentions of what does good preaching Roberts mean. That's been a consistent question that we've gotten. And we may have to drag this on for a little while longer, ladies and gentlemen, just to get you listening and wondering what that means exactly. So I think we will. We'll just keep that for another time.
We may even get Roberts himself calling
in. Oh, you're giving a clue now. You're giving a clue, but that's okay.
Just
that's
a clue.
That's a good teaser. But Michael, not only do we bring a consistent message of the gospel, and you know, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, we know the answer to every question regarding humanity's righteousness and our right standing with God and what we need to do in order to be considered righteous by God. And at the bottom of that, or at the base of that, the foundation of that is God's consistent message to us, which is, I love you no matter what, you're forgiven no matter what, you're righteous no matter what, because the blood of Jesus is sufficient no matter what. That's a good, consistent good news.
Yes, it is. And it's wonderful to have such confidence that you don't present a conflicting message and one that you have to say if, and, or but about. I got an email from my good friend Mike Matzey out in California, and he had forwarded an email to me, somebody who was not happy about what Mike was believing, and and it was challenging this and challenging that. And one of my thoughts as I was reading through what he was saying, that, you know, depending on which, you know, sermon he was in, he would be saying something totally different. And it just depends on who you happen to be in argument or debate with, or whatever. But it is really amazing to be able to say something that no matter what the subject is, we can be consistent with the application of truth. Because truth, if it really is truth, shouldn't change from situation to situation. It should be consistent, at least I would think so.
Well, it would be nice if it was, and it is nice that it is in our case, but all you have to do is watch the members of the legalistic community, the leaders of the legalistic community, on secular television, and you can see that their message to the Larry Kings and the Sean Hannitys and the Chris Matthews of the world is completely different than what they share in church, because they can't share that. Don Imus the other morning interviewed Mike Huckabee, of course, a former governor of Arkansas, who is a well-known former Baptist pastor running for president. He's had some success, especially with the strength of the evangelical supporters in the Republican Party. And Imus asked him if Jews can go to heaven. And so...
Oh, I can almost hear that song and dance.
Yeah, he wouldn't give him a straight answer, of course.
Then and that's what Huckabee is known for, is just giving straight answers.
Yeah, and then the other morning, Imus was interviewing on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, the holiday, the pastor of Harvard University, who happens to be an African-American gay man, who has some very interesting things to say about religion. And Imus asked this guy straight out question, and he said, can Jews go to heaven, and will there be Jews in heaven? And I think the guy's name is Gomez, I want to say, but I'm sorry I don't have the name, but he was very eloquent in his discussion and his speech, and he said, of course there's going to be Jews in heaven. He said, Jesus is a Jew, Peter is a Jew, Paul is a Jew, there's going to be lots of Jews in heaven. And so that was a very straightforward answer, and I thought that was kind of an interesting contrast. This is Glenn Klein Online with Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution. 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. Get on the phone often and early tonight, 1-800-436-3260. We've got all three phone lines available, 1-800-436-3260. Patrick L. Jones waiting to take your calls, and we have a call right out of the box. Our boy from Cincinnati, Greg Amberger, is online. Gregory!
Oh, hey, I didn't have my computer turned off, and I wasn't listening on over the phone, so I got kind of confused.
Well, I'm sure that wasn't the first time, Greg, nor will it be the last time. But
I've been confused many times.
But you're among friends, so it's good.
Do you know how confused I was last week? I got your email, and for some reason, all day last Wednesday, I thought it was Tuesday. I was putting Tuesday's dates on appraisals and everything else, and then I woke up Thursday morning, and I thought, okay, I got to remember Glenn wanted me to call the broadcast tonight, and I looked, and it was Thursday. That's pretty bad.
You are just all over the board, my friend. But
I'm sleep deprived right now.
All right. Well, you know, that's some of our most inspirational moments sometimes, you know, when you're sleep deprived. Well, Greg is one of our Gospel Revolution correspondents calling us from Cincinnati, and who has a new blog that I've been enjoying reading. Tell us about your blog, Gregory.
Well, I just started back in November, just sort of writing down my thoughts, and it's been kind of fun. I've gone back and read over them. Several old friends have kind of, I don't know, reconnected with me through reading my blog, and I've been presenting a little bit of the gospel. I've been a little surprised at kind of how angry some of my posts have been, because I'm not an angry person. I'm really a pretty easygoing guy, and I guess there was a lot that I wanted to say that I was still kind of mad about with the church. So I'm getting over that. I've actually written a couple of funny things lately that I'm going to be posting here pretty soon.
That's awesome. You want to give the address for folks that like to visit?
Yes. Just a minute. It's called Appraising Stuff. I'm a real estate appraiser, and so I called my blog Appraising Stuff, and it's at www.appraisingstuff.blogspot.com.
Awesome. A good gospel title, actually.
Yeah, it's like the whole premise of the thing was that I'm breaking out of appraising houses and just appraising other stuff that I have no business appraising because I have no training or no education or no experience that would allow me to appraise such things.
Well, you do have training. You were in the ministry for a while, weren't you?
Yeah. I didn't have a lot of training for it, though.
Well, apparently well enough. I'm sure you had many people in the shackles of legalism, just like the rest of us.
There's a couple of funny old pictures on the blog of like me on the TBN set sometime around 1982 playing the piano. I dug out some old pictures and put them on there because people think I'm making this stuff up. So,
you know, Michael, it's interesting. Greg brings that up. But sometimes it's hard to believe, even though we all know we went through it, that we actually went through it.
Yeah, it really is very true. It's talk about a second life experience once you have gone headlong into the evangelical movement and where you really do believe and perceive that there is no other life other than that. And to be so completely immersed in a way of thinking and a certain paradigm to where that everything that you think is filtered through that, and for that to begin to crumble away and come into the gospel, it really is nothing short of amazing. You just can't believe. Once you get on the other side of it, you just can't believe you were there. I just watched Truman, one of Jim Carrey's movies, which if anybody remembers it, of course, he was raised
on
the
Truman Show.
The Truman Show.
Yeah, the Truman Show. And I never will forget, of course, Truman had no clue he was inside a soundstage all of his life, and all the people were fake, and everybody was phony, and everything was not real. And
yeah, everybody else knew, but he didn't.
Everybody else knew but Truman, and then Truman's boat ride, and they tried so hard. They turned on a storm, you know, and rocked his boat, and he was thrown from the boat. But he knew there was something beyond where he was until the bow of his boat stuck into the sky in the horizon. And the moment that happened, I just saw so many people's experiences in coming out of religion. And then there was a set of steps going up the side of the skyline and the clouds and the blue sky, which his vessel had just crashed into. And he walked up to the top, and the whole thing, the whole world was watching him. Will he go through the door or will he not? And don't go, don't go. And the rest of the world, you know, cheering him on to go through the door, and he opened that door. So, yeah, you know, and I'm sure it's...
And then did Morgan Freeman come out as God? Oh, no, that was a different movie with Jim Carrey.
Different movie. Yeah. Different movie, but a consistent message, I think.
Yeah.
But I think that's really when you ask, you know, is it amazing to think that we used to be someplace else and viewing things differently? Just having recently watched that little show again, it really was quite enlightening for the situation that a lot of people find themselves in when they step out of religion and realize that the blue sky isn't the blue sky, and you know, the storms that you think you're going through aren't real storms, and the friends you think you have aren't real friends, and you have to discover life again.
Yeah, I write about a lot of that stuff on my blog, about a lot of those feelings. I've got some new ones that I'm getting ready to post I just wanted to tell you one thing I saw tonight. A friend of mine called me, and a guy was substituting. His last name's Franklin. He was substituting for Benny Hinn today, and he actually made the statement. He was trying to get people to give money, and he said, "Don't honor your house payment more than you honor God."
Wow.
And I write on my blog about the foreclosure mess because I'm in a.
Yeah, maybe that's why we've got such a foreclosure mess.
Yeah,
maybe everybody's listening to Benny Hinn's substitute.
That was so offensive to me because I've seen so many people that have lost their houses lately. I've gone in and appraised their houses for the banks after they've been tossed out. And it's so sad what's going on in the country right now. And to hear some preacher say, "Don't make your house payment, send me your money."
I just wanted to take advantage of their desperation, thinking that if they send in their money that somehow that's going to save their house.
Yeah.
Well, we've always said that, you know, the role of religion is instead of helping you in your weaknesses and supporting you in your during the times of fear, it takes advantages of your weaknesses and exploits your fears.
Exactly.
And that really is the comes down to the issue of the difference as far as experience is concerned. Is that we don't try to exploit people's weaknesses and take advantage of their fears. And I remember I was there, and I did it, and I, even though it was against my own nature and my own heart, and thus the statement that finally came out of my mouth a few years ago that, you know, when you come to the point to where that your heart, you realize your heart is kinder than your doctrine, you know, guess which one's wrong?
Before I go, Mike... along that subject, if people want to go to my blog, it's, again, appraisingstuff.blogspot.com. I've got a post on there called A Few Words About Hell, and I tell a story on there about when I was young about a minister who did a funeral and told everybody that the guy that they all loved was probably burning in hell right then.
Oh, my God.
Well, at least he was honest about it.
Yeah, at least he was honest about it, but I just remember the agony of the funeral. The people that didn't walk out were just, they were given no hope whatsoever that this guy wasn't in hell. And it was just the most horrible thing. That was the beginning. I write that was one of the pivotal points in my journey out of classic Pentecostalism because I just went home and I felt like I needed to take a shower.
Mm,
you know, after that funeral, it was the most disgusting thing I was ever a part of. I was sitting at the piano playing music while this guy was talking, and I just wanted to leave.
Where were you at in your walk at that point?
At that point, I was 100% in with the. I had just come over to kind of the word of faith thing from a Pentecostal church, but it was still a real classical Pentecostal church, and I just remember being so disgusted by that. That funeral, that it got me thinking, and of course it was years and years until anything really, really changed with what I began to see about God. But that was definitely a starting point.
Well, go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
That's an awesome point, Greg. That if they ever, and see, that's why they will not be direct, because they know something in their heart knows. That if they ever point blank say what they actually believe, it's going to stir people's hearts to question what they're saying. If anybody ever answers Larry King directly and says, "No, everyone who does not believe in Jesus is going to burn in hell forever, no matter what," there's going to be an uprising against evangelical Christianity, and somehow they know that they can't. Politically, they can't say it. In their pulpits, they can. And the gentleman who had the audacity to say that in the person's funeral, look what it did. It was, as you said, it was the opening door that caused you to begin to question. And I want them to have a voice. Somebody asked me years ago when they first started being enlightened to the gospel, and they, like you and I, we've all gone through, they were furious. And they came up to me at the end of the meeting, and they said, "How do we stop them?" In fact, it was a question at the end of the session. How do we stop them? This is so horrible what they're doing. What do we do? And I said, send them an offering. And he said, what? I said, why? What are you talking about? And I said, we need them to say what they say as clearly and loudly as they possibly can say it, because it is the backdrop that we need to be able to really share the gospel. I just wish they would be honest and come out and say what they really believe in public, because we would win every time in any debate.
No doubt. So, Greg, I am on your blog right now, which, again, folks, is Appraising Stuff blog, or appraisingstuff.blogspot.com. And you were a very attractive Word of Faith piano player there.
Well, thank you.
What happened?
That was like 50 pounds ago, and my hair's all turned gray, and I don't know what happened.
No, you're a fine-looking elder statesman of the gospel now. And who are the two lovely ladies with you in the low-maintenance friends picture?
That's my daughter in the middle, and then my friend Tom and his wife Renee.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are some of our low maintenance friends.
Right. So where is it? Is this a current picture of you on the first page?
No, that's 10 years old.
In the cowboy hat?
Oh no, that's Tim Wilson, because I did my statement of faith this week. Did you read my statement of faith? But I ended it with a line from one of my favorite American philosophers, Tim Wilson, who says he has a song out called "I Could Be Wrong." So I ended my statement of faith with "But I could be wrong," just in case I need to change it later.
I love that. Yeah, and
Mike gets a new revelation, and I got to go back and alter my statement of faith.
Yeah, that is. Did you send me that song, Greg? Did you?
On YouTube.
Yeah, that's unbelievably funny. Unbelievably
Don't
funny.
Don't look it up.
Yeah, look it up, folks. Definitely look it up. No, there you are with your kids and your wife.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, all right. So it's a beautiful family. So listen, we appreciate you calling. You wrote us this beautiful letter about your son. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Greg Amberge of Cincinnati, Ohio. Greg's blog is appraisingstuff.blogspot.com. This is Glenn Klein Online with Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution on a Wednesday night. We're inviting you to call us on the toll-free hotline at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Love the participation. And would you want to talk about that now, Greg? We'd love to talk about it if you don't mind spending a couple more minutes.
Yeah, about the letter I wrote.
Yeah, about your son. Why don't you explain the context of that, and then the letter is awesome.
Okay. Well, a couple of years ago, I began to kind of look up some friends that I knew, people I'd grown up with that I knew were gay. And because I had really begun to feel some guilt about things that I might have said that had to have been really hurtful to them, you know, during that time when they were, you know, trying to figure out their sexuality and things like that when I was younger. Because of just the way I was raised, I believed it was a choice. I believed it was, you know, basically what evangelicals believe about homosexuality. And So I started connecting with some of these guys and one girl, and just opening up to say, I'm sorry if I didn't understand that, and I've kind of grown up a little bit, and I hope that you know, that anything I might have done as a teenager or in my early 20s, I apologize for. And along that line, I talked to my kids, and I said, hey, you know, you guys are going to run into kids that are struggling with sexual issues or whatever, sexual identity issues, because there were a lot of kids that I grew up with that I didn't know were gay, and they were. And so I said, if you run into these kids, be nice to them, you know. Try to, you know, just, they're not that weird or anything, just be nice to them. And my son, his band was looking for a keyboard player, and they heard about this kid. Some other musicians had told him that this kid was a pretty good keyboard player, and so they talked to him about getting in their band. And to make a long story short, the kid's a really talented player who's made their band a lot better, but they've kind of made a new friend. And I just think that I was very proud of my son. I think that maybe even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago, that would have bothered me, that he was hanging out with a kid who was gay or whatever. But now I think it's been good for the kid, and I'm sure it's been good for my son, and their band sounds better.
and the kid's gay is what you're saying.
Yeah, the kid is.
Yeah.
And he knows it. I don't think he's sexually active or anything, but I think he knows that he's gay, and so they've just developed a friendship, and I think high school has got to be miserable for kids with that identity and those struggles, and to have friends that are supportive, I think, has got to be a huge thing.
Well, Michael, it can be miserable, but things are changing. I mean, my daughter is very active in her high school drama department, and of course, there's lots of gay kids, and they call themselves bisexual sometimes, and you know, more and more, there is an acceptance of people for being people. Even Al Gore came out today, Michael, and said that gay and lesbian people should be able to, he said, get married, draw contracts. I thought, well, that's the perfect juxtaposition of marriage, drawing a contract. But basically what Al Gore was saying, that gay people have the same damn right as heterosexuals of being miserable. So I thought that was a step in the right direction.
Well, you know, and things are changing, and I'm very grateful. And I think that is probably my battle cry every time, you know, the subject comes up, is that things are changing. And we live in the best world that the world has ever offered today. Better by far. I mean, no matter what period of history you compare it to, we are getting better at this. We're doing better at this. And the fact of it is that the teen suicide rate is now dropping because of the teen suicide rate, the largest portion of teen suicides was that of the gay community amongst teenagers. And the reason it's dropping is because of people like Greg Amberge, who has changed his mind, and his heart has overshadowed his former doctrines, and he has listened to his heart and found that Jesus Christ resides there, above and beyond all doctrines. And he listened to his heart, and he followed his heart, and he has found the graciousness of God in his own children now. And that's nothing more than positive. It's certainly the story that Greg just told us is certainly a far better result in a story than what we had with the young man that was nailed to a fence and tied to a fence and beaten and died in Wyoming. And
Matthew Shepard.
Yes, Matthew Shepard's story, very moving story, you know, and he died strictly because he was a gay boy. And a lot of people don't like it when I tell Pat Robertson and all of these guys that they too share in the guilt of this person and persons and the society that would find it okay to do something like that. And it's very much a darkness for sure. And Jesus described darkness as someone who does not know where they're going. But they do. They share in that. And I myself, in my former testimony, shared my part in Matthew Shepard's dilemma. But that doesn't mean we can't change our minds. And when a mind changes, the future changes. And the changes that are happening is changing for a better future. And when you switch to a mindset that follows the heart of compassion, it is changing the future. It always will. And as Greg said, even as close as 2 to 3 years ago, he would not have viewed this in this way. But he changed his mind for whatever reason, and I think it's probably been the impact of the gospel in his heart, that he had a mindset change. And look what's happening. And this young man could have faced the desire of his... Let's retell this story a little bit. Let's retell this story. Let's say Greg Amberge was still back in his day, and as Mike Williams was. And maybe he had heard Mike Williams' tape about being a delivered homosexual. And maybe he had made sure that his son knew that homosexuals were evil just by virtue of the fact of their sexuality, not their actions. And you have to understand that gay people do not get judged because of what they do. They get judged because of what they are. Just like as it was in the black community, it wasn't because of what blacks do. It was because of what they are. And that is the cruelty of religion to its very core. And so let's put that young man, and being very talented and wanting so much to have that talent and express that talent, and maybe that was the last thing that he had to hold on to after being rejected by his family because of being gay, after being rejected by his church because of being gay, and then to hold on to that one thing and then have within his grasp to be a part of a musical group where he could express his talent and his God-given talent and ability, and then to be criticized and ridiculed and rejected because of being gay. We could very well, instead of having the story that Greg just told us, we could have had very easily, according to statistics, we could have had another teen suicide instead. A change of mind is a change of the future. And we are going through massive mindset changes. And when I hear stories like Greg Amberge's, it gives me such an incredible drive to continue with what we do, because all it takes is the mindset of one person to change. And then, but when it changes for the good, you want to share that good. And now Greg's got his blog going. He knows where he was. So he's very capable of sharing where he's going. He's come out of darkness into the light. And remember, the difference that Jesus said, walking in darkness isn't when somebody is either gay or straight. Walking in darkness, Jesus said, they are in darkness because they know not where they're going. And thank God we can bring all of these people out of darkness into the light, because we know where they're going, and we can give them a solid course. When your mind can connect and your heart can connect with where you are, no matter what your situation in life is, that your heart can connect, that your destiny is eternal life in the presence of God, you can make it in this world. You can make it, and especially, in fact, you can make this world a better place at the same time, when you know that the person standing next to you also, what their destiny is. When that is us coming out of darkness into his marvelous light. What a marvelous and what a wonderful term to be able to use for it. Coming out of darkness into his marvelous, marvelous light. And this is what Greg has shared with us, is marvelous light. And he's brought it out in a real way, especially comparing that story. Man, I love for darkness to manifest itself. I just wish that they would always manifest themselves instead of sugarcoating their message when their heart and their doctrine does not say that. But you see, their heart and their politics will not allow them to say these things as straightforward as what they actually preach and teach.
Right, and that just demonstrates, fellas, how important honesty is, even if it's wrong.
It is wrong.
Yeah.
Be honest about it.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, the guy that shared at the funeral believed what he was saying. He was being honest, and it caused a reaction. Honesty, there's a power in honesty. There's a force that has to be reckoned with. And
that's right. Greg, you said some people even got up and walked out of that funeral, didn't they?
Yeah, some did. And another thing, when you're talking about that, on my post on hell, I put a link on there to Jonathan Edwards' sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, where he talks about God dangling reprobate infants over the fires of hell.
Sweet.
And, I mean, go read that.
Yep.
You know, click on that link, and that's what Calvinists believe.
Yes, and a lot of them don't even know they believe it.
Well, and I just went on Greg's blog, which I can't recommend highly enough, folks, at appraisingstuff.blogspot.com. And so I'm reading Greg's statement of faith, the first draft. And there is a picture of what Greg calls America's greatest philosopher and one of America's greatest philosophers and amateur theologians, Tim Wilson of Georgia. And he says on there, Tim's photo is illegally shown here without his permission. To give you a little bit of idea of Greg's sense of humor. And it gives a very, very coherent, concise statement of what we believe, which is awesome. And then he says, and demonstrating that he perfectly understands the power of legalism, he says, note to readers, in no way do I recommend going to YouTube and searching for Tim Wilson's song entitled But I Could Be Wrong. In fact, I think this is a terrible idea. So, do not blame me if you, against my advice, go to YouTube and search for Tim Wilson's song entitled But I Could Be Wrong. Please do not do that. See, Greg, the only...
That's just in case my mom stumbles on the blog.
Well, then you guarantee that she's going to go to it.
Understanding the power.
And yes, the only problem is you said please. You were a little too polite. If you said do not do that, even more people would have gone. And there's a little bit more tension in that. It's like when the Lord spoke to Adam. You know, he created everything in the earth, and he said it was good. And he spoke these things. It was good. He said it. But to Adam about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden, he commanded Adam not to partake of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And everything transpired from that. Because God knew what was going to happen, didn't he?
He sure did.
Yes, he most certainly did.
Well, Gregory, thanks a lot for your time, buddy. Please,
thanks, Greg.
Mark down November 5th through the 10th.
I will be there.
Yes, because we're going to have the Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston, Texas. Stay logged on.
You know what's wild? I got a couple of great friends who are professional musicians that have moved to Houston in the last couple years. We may have to get together and play a little music at this thing. If I can talk
awesome.
Them into it. I know
get
one
it
of
together.
Them would be kind of open to it, and one of them would be afraid he might lose his job if he did that.
Well, tell him we won't tell him anybody. And tell them Rastafarians are welcome, too, so there's no problem there.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Greg, you're the man.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. There's Greg Amberge, our correspondent from the Queen City of Cincinnati, Ohio. That's flat out uplifting to talk to that guy is what that is.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. It's been awesome to witness Greg's journey and... I remember when the issue of coming out with my sexuality, he was honest and he let it be known that he had difficulty with that, but he didn't stop thinking, he didn't stop growing. And man, I tell you what, it's things like this that give me such great hope for the future. And Glenn, I cannot say enough. We are in such a much better place than where we've ever been in the history of this planet, and we are going to much better places. I was sitting in the living room just before the broadcast thinking of just a guilt-free world. You know, people talk about, you know, about change, and, you know, I was having a conversation with some friends who finally realized that I don't believe in the end of the planet, the end of the world. I believe the end of the world in its strictest biblical sense, as Jesus taught it, as an event that took place 2,000 years ago when he terminated the Jewish pursuit of God and turned it around to the one Jew who pursued all of humanity and won, and that is Jesus Christ. But I was sitting there and I was thinking about my friends. They believed the gospel, but at the same time, they had not muddled through this end time doctrine thing. And you know, it's almost like that's supposed to be the event that changes everything. But you know what? If the cross doesn't change everything, then nothing has the power to change everything. We so demean the work of Jesus Christ by preaching a doctrine, the end-time doctrine that we preach. It is not even, it's not funny at all. It's the term grievous is just the only term that comes to. It's hideous.
It's grotesque is what it is.
It really is when we replace the work of the cross with another event that is supposed to be superior to the work of the cross, that's going to bring an end to all of the fulfillment of all the prophecies of the Old Covenant. When the power of Jesus Christ at the cross is what fulfilled all of the things of the covenant. And people say, well, you can't believe that this is, that sin's been done away with. Well, I'm sorry, but I have to agree with the prophets. Jesus did away with sin in relationship to God. Jesus did away with wickedness in relationship to God. Jesus did away with unrighteousness in relationship with God. Jesus did away with unbelief in relationship with God. They don't even exist, Glenn. They're not even an issue anymore. We look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross and despised the shame and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And it is time that we stop being mealy-mouthed about the contrast between the gospel and this hideous thing called evangelical Christianity. It's not something that we need to try to weave our way into. I don't want to be a part of it. There's times that people with all the goodness of hearts, it's like they feel like that we're supposed to kind of weave our way into and disappear into this evangelical Christian mindset. Please let it be heard. I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to be accepted by them. I want to be a light that shines for the gospel to show people where they're going. I'm not instructing them how to get there. I just simply want to show them where they're going. And that way they don't have to walk in darkness anymore. The power of this gospel for this world, Glenn, imagine a world where people never felt guilty again. Do you know that psychiatrists say it is the single number one most predominant reason for mental and emotional illness on the planet is the issue of guilt? Can you imagine that the other subject, which Paul taught so clearly on, that the two things, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, two things should be totally absent in your life. Two things. Guilt and judgment. My goodness. Can you imagine if there was no judgment in Osama bin Laden's heart? Can you imagine if there was no guilt in his heart?
How about if there was no judgment in George W. Bush's heart?
Absolutely.
Or Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama's heart.
Any one of
now,
them.
Now, we can imagine that, folks, because there's no judgment in our hearts anymore. We've said this many times publicly. It's been a long time since Michael and I, independently of each other, but we have acknowledged and spoken together. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. I'll think of it. Not camaraderie. We've commiserated over the fact that we both don't experience guilt. So we understand it's possible, because if people like us could, Michael, if we could go through life without experiencing guilt as an emotion and as a motivating force, it's doable. It's out there. It's graspable. It's nothing to be grasped. It comes as a natural a consequence of meditating and contemplating this thing called the gospel, righteousness in Christ. And one of the challenges, I think, that, Michael, that we have, as you talk about not wanting to be part of the church, is what do we want to be part of?
Yeah.
And you know what you're part of, ladies and gentlemen, by what you think about. And frankly, if the gospel is not forefront in your thinking on a consistent basis, whether it's daily, weekly, many times a day. It happens many times a day for me, but it happens on purpose when I throw in a CD of Mike's, or when Michael and I talk, or we're doing the webcast, or when I'm talking to somebody about the gospel. Obviously, when Greg, is blogging about the gospel. This is the meditation. Meditation literally means to mutter. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen for you. And it doesn't mean you're any different in God's sight. You just won't experience some of the blessings of the gospel that evolve our – it's called salvation. If you want to have a more of an in-depth and profound salvation experience, there's only one way that we know about it, and that's to contemplate reconciliation. Reconciliation between God and humanity, and reconciliation between each other. We are not opposed to each other. We are actually one big righteous family. We are one body. We are all one in Christ. Do these terms sound familiar? They include everybody that you will see tomorrow. They include everybody that you saw today. They include everybody in your family, past, present, and future. It includes Heath Ledger. What a tragedy yesterday in New York City for such a fine young actor and apparently a very, very sweet man, a new father, to have his life taken at 28 years old and perhaps have taken his own life through some form of abuse or behavior that wasn't not healthy, obviously. But Michael, whether he goes at 28 or 88, we know where he is tonight without a shadow of a doubt. And how many people around the world who have the evangelical mindset have received the news of this actor, Heath Ledger, of course, having portrayed a gay cowboy in Brokeback Mountain, thinking, well, that's why he died young.
Oh, absolutely. They'll absolutely judge him for the fact that he tried to make homosexuality an acceptable thing, and therefore God killed him. And no doubt that will happen in the mind.
It's going to be preached from pulpits all over the world. I'm going to prophesy right now. It's going to be preached all over the world this Sunday.
Yeah.
And what a tragedy. It's not a tragedy for Heath Ledger. He's good to go. The people in his life love him. They know that who their son was and who their father was and their boyfriend was. But it's such a shame for the people that are sitting there. And imagine all the closeted gays in the church, Michael, that watched Brokeback Mountain and wanted to see it. And it was such a, you know, it's kind of like Greg's recommendation to go to that one YouTube thing. You know, he's like, you can't watch that. So I guaranteed that certain people were going to watch that. But in a lot of ways, Heath Ledger was a pioneer, and he took risks, obviously, in more ways than one. But you said something to me one time, Michael. You said, with greatness comes dysfunction. And I am interested to when people have situations like apparently Heath Ledger died from, they always talk about personal demons and how they have demons. This, of course, comes from the church's tradition. What would you say to somebody that Keith Ledger died because he had demons?
Well, of course, that I definitely would not agree with that at all. So the fact that he had, and of course nobody knows. I mean, this could have been a perfectly natural cause. We don't know why this young man died, number one. So anything would be an assumption. Just because he had prescription bottles of medicine next to his nightstand, that's 90% of the American public.
Right, but he has some past history. I mean, there's no doubt he was troubled, and he said he was troubled, and some of the medication was for depression. It doesn't really make a difference why, specifically how he died, except what when the people that were close to him said that he was battling demons. How do you respond to that?
Well, it is, it can be described as demonic, but the thing that brings it on is the thing that we take issue with. It's not because of a unlawful choices of life or, standing for something or against something. I think that the creative people in this world that experience such dysfunction, I don't think it's because of the creativity in and of itself. It's because when you see things more clearly than those around you, it puts you in a dysfunction with your social status. And Heath also was known for not fitting into the Hollywood scene. He just didn't do it. He didn't try to fit in, and obviously probably felt that he didn't fit in. But whenever there is any amount of forward thinking with creativity, you cannot be creative without being forward thinking, without thinking just a step ahead of the generation that you're in. You'll never be creative unless you think at least one step ahead of the generation that you're in. It has never happened, and it will never happen on the face of planet Earth, that someone becomes creative to where that they touch the lives and hearts of other people and stay in lockstep with the generation that they're in. You must step forward to allow the creativity that's there. But with that step forward, Glenn, gives you a sense of isolation.
Yes.
From your own generation.
Yep.
You begin to feel isolated because there's, and I'm speaking this from my heart right now. These are not things that I've contemplated before, as you know. But when you step into that place where you dare to step forward, whether it's because of the creativity or the step forward creates the brings forth the creativity, I don't know which one it is. I believe every human is born into this planet gifted and creative in many different directions in many different ways. Maybe it is the step forward that causes that creativity to come out. You know, folks, there's no reason in the world that I should be standing in the position that I am in, bringing and expressing the gospel with the clarity that I do. I'm a high school dropout, for God's sake. I've never been to Bible school a day in my life. I've taught in many of them. I have doctorates from Bible school.
Wait. I didn't know that.
Yes.
You're Dr. Michael Williams?
Yes, I am.
Sweet.
I've been doctored. But you see, my childhood was full of depression and because of the issues is that I was already outside of society being a gay young man, and I would not accept that. It was not my acceptance of my sexuality that drove me into a mental institution and three attempts at suicide. It was the rejection of my sexuality that drove me into the mental institution and with six different times and three attempts at suicide. It was not. Please hear me. It was not my acceptance of my sexuality. It was my rejection of my sexuality that drove me into mental and emotional illness and three attempts of suicide. But somewhere along the way, that the combination of that put me in a place in life where stepping forward was the only thing I could do. And I started listening to my heart, and the gospel began to grow. And I begin to see it, and I cannot believe that most of these people who are at the forefront of religion around the world today, that they didn't have a glimpse of this gospel, but at some point had to make a decision. And I've heard of the discussions between a lot of people in the higher echelon of religion, of people who are on TV to this very day. And their discussions with them, and they acknowledge, we believe that this is probably the truth, but we can't go there. We can't teach that. We can't preach that. We can't say that. We can't share that. And I never will forget, 20 years ago, hearing, maybe 25 years ago, hearing Kenneth Hagin Sr. saying he knew what the gospel was, but he couldn't share it because the world wasn't ready for it. Admitting that what he was sharing was not the gospel. How in the hell do you live with yourself and do that? He literally said, now this was one of my mentors. I listened to him. I studied him. And then he came out and said, I know what the real gospel is. I just can't share it because the world's not ready for it.
Who was that?
That was Kenneth Hagin Sr. The founder of Rhema.
He told you that before he passed away?
No, he said that publicly 25 years ago.
Wow.
I heard it on a tape. It wasn't anything said in a private meeting. He openly said, I know what the gospel is, but I cannot share it because God told me that the people aren't ready for it yet.
Wow.
Now, evidently, Jesus didn't know the people weren't ready for it, or he wouldn't have died on the cross until they were ready for it.
Somebody should have told Paul.
He wrote
extensively. We've got about 6 minutes left, ladies and gentlemen, in this edition of Glenn Klein Online. There's still time for you to call us at 1-800-436-3260 if you want to get in on the discussion. 1-800-436-3260. The world is definitely ready for it now, Michael. I can say that with all confidence.
I agree with you 100%.
All right, we got a letter here. We got so many letters, and we always appreciate you folks writing us and being patient to hear back on the webcast. Your questions and comments always welcome at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. It must be our musician night because we heard from Greg Ambergy, a piano player, a keyboardist, if you will. I don't know what other instruments Greg plays, but this comes to us from San Antonio, Texas, not too far from you, from Bill Patterson. It's kind of long, but it's good. I want to read it. He says, I am a professional musician and can attest to the fact that many of the artists are some of the most jaded and skeptical people you come across. I think it has to do with the number of times we play in churches and hear all the condemnation. Anyway, yesterday at a break, I was walking down a hall where a bunch of people were congregated discussing all the different views of religion and how everybody is resigned to hell, especially by Christians. I couldn't resist the open door. The fellow who was leading the charge is someone I have known for a while, but I have never had any close encounters, so to speak. I just chimed right in. Well, I'm a believer, and I think they, evangelicals, are misguided. It was sort of a magnet for sharing. This guy is pretty hardened, very intelligent, mind you. You should have seen the look on his face. I have never seen defensiveness drop that fast and to that degree in my life. I started sharing principles of Romans 5 and started telling this guy in front of everyone else that God considers him righteous and holy, that God does not hold his sins against him, etc., etc. It was so logical and brief, but you could see a deep penetration that only God could design. The next thing I knew, he was following me down the hall with endless questions. It all made so much sense. His sister is Greek Orthodox and has been telling him for years he was doomed. He kept talking about our works, and I kept pointing out that God deals with us on the basis of Christ's performance, not ours. He wanted to know more, so I gave him a copy of Michael's tape, You Must Be Born Again.
Wow.
Which brings Bill to this question. I can't properly copy CDs from your web links. There are some really good ones there I'd like to share, but I keep getting messages that won't fit on my CD as they are too long. I would be willing to purchase these directly from you if you have someone who could put these together. Any ideas? Yeah, Bill, we've got a great idea. Go to gospelrevolution.com and order every single series that is on that website. Just go to gospelrevolution.com. Click on resources and have at it. Everything current is on CD and available to you there. But what a great story. I mean, Michael, you hear somebody who's ready for a fight, and you tell them, you're good to go. I don't even need to know where you've been, where you hang out with, if you drink, smoke, chew, or hang around with girls that do. I just know that what Jesus thinks of you and what he did for you. And all of a sudden, this guy is firing away. He wants to know what's going on. This is not an unusual occurrence or experience.
And the light shineth in darkness. Man, I tell you what. And boy, I tell you, when you know Jesus' definition of walking in darkness, you say the light shineth in darkness, all you got to do is let people know what their destiny is, and they are no longer walking in darkness. And just as in this situation, it doesn't take a lot to penetrate that darkness, because so much of the jargon and the intellect and their supposed knowledge of things is trying to create some excuse. Do you know how much better it is to live by a promise than to live by an excuse? People do not live by the promises of God. They live by their excuses. because they have to excuse themselves from certain laws to be able to accept anything of redemption. They must include their firm belief, which they know it's not as firm as what is required. And then, of course, they know that if they don't continue in the faith, and they know if they don't if they're not obedient unto the end, they're not going to make it. So, folks, I tell you what, step into the light. Let us tell you this is where you're going. You don't have to live in darkness anymore. You don't have to have any wondering, even especially evangelicals. Those of you who have trusted in your own faith, let me give you a faith to trust in, the faith of the Son of God, which is the faith that that Paul himself trusted in for his redemption. He said that he trusted in the faith of the Son of God who loved him. When you experience God through the faith of Jesus Christ rather than your own faith, you will know that you are loved. When you experience it through your own faith, you will doubt that you are loved. So many times it doesn't even make believing worth the effort except to fit in a church group. And faith ought to do something more than make you fit in church. Faith ought to make you know you are united with God beyond any reason of any human being's ability to try to undermine it, that no matter what you do or what you say or where you go, that you will be able to cry out with David that even if you make your bed in hell, he is there also.
Yeah.
You cannot escape the presence of God. Quit trying to get into the presence of God and realize you cannot escape the presence of God. He is here with you all the time, and all it takes is stop and enjoy the moment. Enjoy your life. Dear God, step out of darkness and step into his marvelous light.
Yay and amen. Hey, folks, that's going to do it for tonight. But before we leave you, we want to remind you that Michael's going to be in Baytown, Texas this weekend at the Friday evening meeting there in Baytown. And also, they picked you up for an extra gig on Saturday morning, eh, Mike?
Yes, they did.
Sweet.
I was really happy about that. They wanted they asked if I could that in my staying over, would I do another session on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. I was just thrilled.
Well, that's cool. And also, for you beautiful humans, Kevin Beck is going to provide this entire conference in Baytown, the 2008 Transmillennial Conference. Very intriguing name. And all you got to do is email him at kevin@presence.tv and let him know that you're interested. And if you can do it today, by the end of the day, if this is Wednesday the 23rd, or certainly if you hear this in the next couple of days, it's obviously got to be before Friday, before the conference. But you can sign up for that to hear the entire conference online. That's Kevin Beck, and his email address is Kevin. K-E-V-I-N at presence, presence.tv. And then, Michael, at the beginning of the month of February, you're going to be with James Forehan in the Body of Christ, Texas, also known as Corpus Christi.
Uh-huh.
I love that. So much for the separation of church and state. Corpus Christi, Texas, in the... well, not too far from Houston, actually.
It's about 4 hours down to Corpus Christi from here.
7 o'clock on February 1st and Saturday, February 2nd at 10 o'clock in the morning. James would like RSVP. Lunch is going to be served on Saturday, refreshments Friday. James Forehan is the Champions of Grace meeting. You can call him to respond to hear Michael in the beginning of February, February 1st and 2nd. James Forehan's phone number is 361-991-6105. 361-991-6105. I'm so nice, I repeat the number twice.
Yes, you do.
And James' website, too, is www.jubileeconnection.com. Jubileeconnection.com. Our website is...
Good man down there in Corpus Christi.
James is a great guy. I got to meet him briefly in Houston when I was there. And so I come home, Michael, last week. I leave northern Wisconsin, and I left in a blizzard. And literally, the temperatures were dropping below zero, and you think that there is no way that the plane can take off. I mean, it's the snow's going through the slush. It's a little puddle jumper going from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, to Minneapolis, catch a flight there back to Tampa. And I was tempted to pray.
Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, not so much. And I just thank God for His grace.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess I succumbed to that temptation to pray. But I was thinking about praying for a outcome. But we already know the outcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're righteous. You're holy. You're pure. You're perfect. You're white. You're even whiter than the snow that was falling all over the plane that day.
Absolutely.
But my flight, maybe I should have prayed because my flight was, I missed my flight because the flight was delayed out of Wisconsin to Minnesota. And I had, instead of going home to Tampa, being home by 5 o'clock for happy hour, seeing dawn, I had to fly on a later flight to Newark, New Jersey. And then I had to go from New Jersey to Tampa, and I had on a different airline and had no idea, nor did the airlines, where my luggage would be.
There is a hell, isn't there?
And I experienced it, but I live to tell the tale. Want to thank Patrick Jones for producing and engineering this webcast, our call screener extraordinaire, Jay Harper White, for assisting here in the official Glenn Klein Online Studios. Want to thank Greg Ambergy of Cincinnati, Ohio. Check out Greg's blog, will you, at appraisingstuff.blogspot.com. You'll enjoy that, Michael, if you get over there. A lot of good stuff. You'll see a picture of Greg playing the piano in 1992 at TBN. And so that's kind of cute. And but really fun and informational and inspirational writing by Greg Ambergy. And want to thank you, Mikey, as always.
Thank you, Glenn.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know that.
And thank everybody for tuning in.
Let us hear from you this week. Log on to gospelrevolution.com. Donations are always appreciated, tax-deductible in the United States of America. Order your tapes there, Bill Patterson, actually your CDs, and everybody else do the same. And please join us again in 1 week's time. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!